Good morning and welcome. It's week four of the legislative session. This is the Florida League of Cities Monday morning call-in. Thank you for joining us, and we hope to see many of you in Tallahassee. I know that folks are headed north right now, and we look forward to seeing you here in the capital city. For those that are new to the call-in, we start the call going around the horn where you get to hear from each of our lobbyists, the big stuff that they have going this week, and where we need help on the advocacy front. Once the lobbyists have shared their updates, we'll open the call for questions. If you'd like to ask a question at that point in time, you'll press *9 on your phone. As a reminder, this call is being recorded, and we will send an email summary as well as a link to the call's recording out later this afternoon. Please note, this is a 30-minute call, so it's not possible to cover every single bill that's been filed, but I have some good news for you. There's a comprehensive list of all the bills we're tracking on the League of Cities website, flcities.com. Hover your mouse over the advocacy tab, look about halfway down, and you will see bill summaries. It's updated weekly, and it's a tremendous resource. All right. As I mentioned earlier, it's week four of the legislative session. It is fast and furious at the Capitol, long agendas, long meetings, lots of bills are up. During this first month of session, but don't stop believing. We will, if we continue to do our jobs, I think we'll have a favorable outcome at the end of this session. But it's going to take every single person that's listening, to this call to reach out to your legislators and let them know about some of these policies, that are being proposed in these bills. If we can all do that, I think we can educate legislators and we'll end up with something that we're happy with. So with that as the introduction, it's Finance and Tax Corner. I'm going to kick it to Charles Chapman.
Well, good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. Looking forward to seeing everyone that's coming up to Tallahassee because it's getting hot in the Finance and Tax Corner this week. For all of you that have been listening in over the last couple of weeks, we've been waiting and watching to see what might happen, and here it is, week four. We've got a lot of sponsors that are getting nervous, and they're trying to put pressure on chairs to hear their bills. So the first one out the gate, Community Affairs, tomorrow, Tuesday at 11 a.m., we have Senate Joint Resolution 1510 and Senate Bill 1512, which would be an implementing bill, both by Senator Avila. These are a proposed constitutional amendment dealing with the extension of homestead property tax exemptions and assessment limitations to long-term leased properties. Now, that is a mouthful and a half, so let me break that down very simply. Let's say Charles owns a homesteaded piece of property. So I do get the homestead exemption. That makes sense. But let's say I have an investment property across town and I lease that property out for 6 months. If this bill is voted approved by the voters at a referendum in 2026 with 60% more of the approval rating vote, then it would extend my homestead property tax assessment limitation and the $50,000 tax exemption to my investment property as long as I have a long-term lease of 6 months or more. The House version of the bill was scored this past Friday. That would be House Joint Resolution 1257 and House Bill 1259 by Representative Lusada. These bills are identical, so this score would be reflective in the Senate Joint Resolution I've been mentioning by Senator Avila. At 2030, if this is approved, it will have a negative impact to local governments of $1.4 billion. That's $1.4 billion. So that is up tomorrow in the Senate Community Affairs Committee. We would love to have feedback if you have it immediately, but we will be meeting with the Senate sponsor as well as preparing folks to give testimony in that committee tomorrow. Also in the Senate Community Affairs Committee is Senate Bill 1664 by Senator Trumbull, dealing with local option taxes. Now, those of you that may scratch your head and say, what does that mean, Charles? Think about tourism development taxes. Think about your discretionary sales surtaxes. Some of you down in South Florida, I think there's three cities that have a municipal resort tax. What this bill does is it shortens the life cycle of these discretionary sales taxes from approximately 20 to 30 years, depending on the tax we're talking about, and resorts that down to 8 years to where it has to be put on the ballot for the voters to either reaffirm or strike it down. There is some language within the bill that contemplates these funds that are dedicated to long-term debt, such as bond financing, et cetera, but we still feel that this bill is not contemplating the long-term viability of capital improvement programs, the participation rates between counties and cities to do quality infrastructure projects, especially with the half-cent sales tax for infrastructure, considering that nationwide we have a $1.4 trillion deficit in infrastructure spending. An eight-year life cycle on these referendums is just not sufficient. So if you are one of the 190 cities in the state of Florida that gets funding from one of these types of discretionary sales taxes, please reach out to me. I'd love to coordinate with you in order to get your concerns heard in front of the Senate Community Affairs Committee. Last one before I kick it over to David Cruz is House Bill 503 by Representative Otana. This is the local business tax bill we've been reporting on the last couple of weeks. It has made it through two of its three stops. It could be up this week on Wednesday in the House State Affairs Committee, but we will not know that until around 5 o'clock this afternoon. So stay tuned, stay close to your devices. Thank you for your support. Looking forward to seeing you, and I'll kick the ball to David Cruz.
Thank you, Charles, and good morning, everybody. Senate Community Affairs is shaping up to be a pretty busy agenda tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. I have one bill on that agenda I wanted to bring to your attention. It's Senate Bill 482 by Senator DeSigley. The bill's titled Local Government. In reality, the bill does two things. Number one, it would prohibit your city or county from requiring a developer at the time that they're getting their development permit or order to pay for art or install an art installation as part of your city's process to approve the development permit or order. The second thing the bill does is it deals with impact fees. Under current law, cities and counties are currently prohibited from increasing their impact fees more than 12.5% per year. However, under the current law, there is an exception to that called the extraordinary exemption. And essentially, if your city declares an extraordinary circumstance and they get a two-thirds vote and a study proving that there's an extraordinary circumstance, you could increase your impact fee by more than 12.5%. This bill seeks to define what an extraordinary circumstance does, and they do that in order to limit the situations in which your city would be able to do that. The current definition in the bill is one that would require your county to have a surplus population growth above the current estimates in order for your city then to qualify. However, we recognize that in many instances, cities are outpacing the growth of counties. And so therefore, that definition to us is unworkable. And so we've been working with the sponsor and the interested stakeholders in trying to refine what that definition is. The proponents of this bill are the Home Builders Association, along with developers. They argue that they need predictability and stability and impact fee increases so that they could plan for these as they plan their projects. The League of Cities is opposed to the bill, and like I mentioned, we are working on trying to refine that definition of extraordinary circumstance. Another bill I wanted to bring to your attention briefly is one that the Senate Governmental Oversight and Accountability Committee will consider on Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. This is Senate Bill 582 by Senator Leak. This bill deals with the unlawful demolition of buildings on the historical register. Under current law, cities and counties, the maximum fine that you could fine a developer if they tear down one of these historic buildings, if your city's population is less than 50,000, is a $5,000 fine. Developers are recognizing that that's just the cost of doing business. They'll tear down one of these historic structures, recognizing that the dirt is incredibly valuable, and they'll try to develop a bigger and more valuable property and just pay that $5,000 fine. This bill would increase that fine and make it proportional to the market value of the property. And so therefore, we support this bill. This is Senate Bill 582. It's one that we support. And then real briefly, just wanted to give you some quick updates on two major issues for those of you that are keeping track at home. The CRA bills are ones that the League of Cities is opposing. These bills will not be considered this week. And so I just wanted to let you know that's good news. Neither the House nor the Senate will be considering the CRA bills this week. On sovereign immunity, the Senate will not be considering the sovereign immunity bill this week. So again, good news. For those of you that will be meeting with Senator Yarbrough this week, please praise him for not hearing this bill so far in the Senate Judiciary Committee. He's been extremely helpful in that regard. The House may consider the sovereign immunity bill in the House Judiciary Committee this Wednesday. We are waiting to see what the committee notice is. We'll get that at 5 o'clock today. And so stay tuned in regards to sovereign immunity in the House. And with that, I'll kick it over to Matt Singer.
Well, thank you, David, and good morning, everyone. I have two bills to put on your radar this week. The first is up this afternoon, and is Senate Bill 810, Stormwater Management Systems, by Senator Burgess, and the Senate Transportation, Tourism, and Economic Development Subcommittee. This bill, when filed, would have mandated cities inspect all of their known works every year without providing a fiscal. What this would mean for us is that the infrastructure that we're already inspecting as part of our DEP permitting process would need to be accelerated and inspected every year. A lot of this would be redundant, and so the league's been working with the sponsor to try to narrow in this and make sure it's a targeted piece of legislation that achieves his goal. He's seeking to try to make sure that municipal stormwater systems, specifically our canals and pipe culverts, are clear so when storms come in high rainfall events, that it doesn't flood communities like his. And so this bill is up this afternoon and does have an amendment filed to it. It takes a step in the right direction, and unfortunately, it doesn't go far enough. This bill would be narrowed in scope. What that means is that this bill would define infrastructure that is high risk and would allow us to target our rehabilitation in a little bit more of a straightforward manner. This bill still does have another stop on the Senate side and still does not have a House companion filed to it, which means it still has a long way to go before it passes, but wanted to put it on your radar since it's up this afternoon. The second bill that's up that I wanted to put on your radar today is this in the Senate Regulated Industries Committee and the Senate Bill 818. This bill, titled Utility Relocation, is filed by Senator McClain. And what this bill would do is it would impact cities where your infrastructure for utilities is in the public right away. When FDOT has a road project that's impacted, they need cities to relocate this type of infrastructure, but also need investor-owned utilities to relocate it too. And so when the department issues a notice that our facilities are in the right of way, this bill would mandate cities to produce a relocation schedule within 30 days and within 60 days to begin the work relocating that infrastructure. This is incredibly accelerated and unfortunately shifts costs from the private sector onto our cities. And so we're trying to work with both bill sponsors to try to narrow these and ensure that any funding mechanisms that are currently in law are preserved, and that this doesn't create a burden on our cities. And with that, I'll pass it to Rebecca.
Thank you, Matt. Good morning, everybody. I have two bills I want to bring to your attention this morning, the first of which is going to be on the agenda for the Senate Community Affairs Committee Tuesday at 11 a.m. And that bill is Senate Bill 1594 by Senator McClain, and it relates to affordable housing. This is the affordable housing tax policy bill. It expands a number of existing ad valorem tax exemptions for projects that provide a certain amount of affordable housing. Of particular interest to cities is what the bill does to the so-called missing middle property tax exemption. This is the one that allows cities and counties to opt out of providing the tax exemption if there is a housing report by the Schemberg Center that demonstrates that the jurisdiction does not have a housing deficit. So what this bill does, it expands the definition, the eligibility for these exemptions to include more developments. Under the current law, in order to qualify, a proposed project would have to provide at least 70 units of affordable housing. This bill reduces that down to only one unit of affordable housing for a development to qualify for the exemption. But just note, the exemption applies only to the affordable portions of the project, not the whole project. It also modifies the criteria for a city and county to opt out. So instead of looking at just the last year's Schemberg report on whether you have a deficit of affordable units, the bill requires you to look at three prior years of those reports, and all 3 years must show that you don't have a housing deficit in order for you to opt out. If you meet that criteria, you would still need to perform your own housing needs analysis prior to opting out. So that is Senate Bill 1594 by Senator McClain, and that's up in the Community Affairs Committee tomorrow at 11. The second bill I want to bring to your attention is another housing bill, and this is the Big Bad Wolf. This is House Bill 943 by Representative Lopez, and this is the Housing Land Use Policy Bill. It's hard to unpack what this bill does, but I can assure you that none of it is good. So in order, I'll try to hit the highlights, or rather the lowlights, and tell you a little bit about what the bill does. It expands the Live Local Act to nearly every zoning district in cities and counties. It eliminates your ability to apply objective land use regulations to these developments in order to reduce land use conflicts. It expands the exemption to property owned by a religious institution and prohibits local governments from applying any zoning or land development regulations to those religious institution-owned properties. Oh, and by the way, that's all done through administrative approval. It also greatly expands eligible properties for Live Local. It includes adjacent parcels to a commercial, industrial, or mixed-use residential area. It includes all planned unit developments. It includes any other zoning district that's not solely single-family. And it also defines mixed use in such a way that the bill actually includes single-family zones within areas that a Live Local project could be located. It also defines commercial in such a way so that a single family zone with a home-based business in it could open up the entire single family zoning district for a Live Local Act project. It requires the reduction of impact fees by 20% for a Live Local project. It provides three different causes of action to sue a local government if the local government takes any action that has the effect of limiting a Live Local Act project, and provides for attorney's fees to the prevailing plaintiff. It requires local governments to waive parking requirements for all Live Local Act projects, regardless of their location or proximity to parking or transit. It preempts the regulation of affordable housing to the state. It requires local governments to approve accessory dwelling units by right in a single family area. It redefines an urban service area to include any area that might conceivably have urban services available over a 20-year planning period. And it modifies urban infill requirements to impose administrative approval requirements upon local governments for any type of development in an urban infill area, and prohibits the application of zoning or land development requirements to such developments. That bill is on the agenda for the House Housing, Agriculture, and Tourism Subcommittee at noon on Tuesday. There have been about 7 or 8 amendments filed to the bill within the last hour. We're still in the process of analyzing those, but this is the House's version of Live Local modifications. Nothing in it is good for cities. Thank you. I'm going to turn it over to Sam Wagner.
Thank you, Rebecca. Good morning, everyone. I have two bills for you this week, Senate Bill 110 and House Bill 1427 of the Rural Communities Bill. The sponsors are Senator Simon and Representative Griffiths. We're currently still monitoring these bills. This is the central priority of the Senate President. These bills modernize support for fiscally constrained counties or FCCs by updating definitions and increasing the FCC threshold from $5 million to $10 million generated per mill in property tax revenue. It boosts fiscally constrained county funding to at least $50 million annually and establishes new spending requirements for public safety, infrastructure, and other public purposes. There's approximately $119 million in funds allocated to various grants aimed at revitalizing rural communities. Our argument is simple. Any city that's within a fiscally constrained county should get direct funding. The bill is passed out of the Senate and is sitting in House messages. The House bill will be up this afternoon in its first committee of reference, the Commerce Committee. The second bill I have for you is House Bill 1183 and Senate Bill 1576, the Cybersecurity Incident Liability Bills, by Representative G. Lombardo and Senator DeSigley, respectively. We are in support of these bills. These bills provide exempt cities, counties, and other political subdivisions of the state from liability in connection with a cybersecurity incident if the local entity has substantially complied with current training and cybersecurity standards required by statute, or if they participate in the local government cybersecurity grant program. This bill will be up in its first committee of reference tomorrow in the House, and we will be there to wave in support. The bill has not been heard in the Senate yet. And with that, I'll pass it back to Casey Cook.
Thank you, Sam. As a reminder, we'll transition now into the question and answer portion of the call. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you'll press start and you'll lead with your name and the city you're affiliated with. But before we go to our first question, we have a special guest in the room with us here in the studio, President Michael Blake, City of Cocoa. President Blake, you want to say anything?
Yes. Good morning, my fellow Floridians. It is a pleasure to speak with you today here at Capitol Hill. I would like to say thank you very much. Two things I'd like for you to get from this conversation. I would like for you to educate yourself and collaborate with the Florida League of Cities, but more so than anything else, share your story with your state legislators. It's imperative that they get direct information and how financially and economically impact you. And in conclusion, may you have a wonderful day in the Sunshine State. And I'm going to kick it back to you, Casey.
Thank you, President Blake. All right, as a reminder, *9 to ask a question. When it's your turn to go, you'll lead with your name and your city. We must have done an outstanding job on this call because I'm not seeing any questions coming in. So this is going to be final call for questions. *9 if you have one. Going once. Going twice. All right. We look forward to seeing you all in Tallahassee where you can ask your questions in person. We're going to have a really successful Legislative Action Days. Oh, and with that, somebody jumped in. All right. First question.
Hey, Casey. It's Rich Reed from Lake Park. Sorry to hold the meeting up, but I just was wondering what time the housing and agricultural meeting was on Tuesday. I missed that information. I'm sorry.
Great question, Rich. It starts at noon on Tuesday.
And do we know the room number?
We do. It is in 17 House Office Building. And that meeting block is from noon to 3 p.m. 17 is going to be in the basement of the House.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you.
All right. Thank you, Rich. All right. We look forward to seeing everybody later today and tomorrow. We're going to have a successful week. We're going to have a united voice, and together we're going to bury some of these proposals we've talked about today. So thank you for joining us. Look forward to seeing you in town. Have a good week.